Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Chof Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin from the last two words on Kuf Chof Dalet Amud Beis, where you see the beginning of a Mishnah. Before actually beginning the Gemara, the text, let us take advantage of one of our features of the Gemara markings, the Shas Ozer, that you see in the outside margin, the Nosei topic heading. Under the Nosei that we have written at the bottom of Kuf Chof Dalet Amud Beis, we see Kulis. Kulis is a reference to a thigh bone, a bone that, generally speaking, contains a good deal of marrow. Mosai Shayech Tumo Bo. When is it appropriate to speak about it being a source of Tumo? We'll talk about Mago, contact, touching, Maso, carrying. We will also see references to Kulis Shelmes, the thigh bone of a dead human being, Shel Mugdoshim, of a sacrifice, an animal that was offered as a sacrifice. Shel Sheretz, a Sheretz is a type of creature that the Torah tells us communicates Tumah through contact. And Shel Nevela, the thigh bone of an animal that did not receive a proper shechita, but rather died. Now, turning to the Mishnah. The last two words on Kuf Chof Dalet Amud Beis, Kulis Hameis, now we continue with Kuf Chof Hei Omed Aleph at the top, the Kulis Hamugdoshim, whether it be the thigh bone of a dead human being or the thigh bone of a sacrificed animal, Hanogea Bohen, one who touches them, Bain Stumen, Bain Nikuvin, Tomei, whether the bone is totally sealed or whether it has a hole in it, there will be a communication of Tuma. In the case of the thigh bone of a mace, the bone itself communicates Tuma. It's the rule of Atzmois Mace, Armetame, Vimago, Uvimaso. And with regard to Mugdoshim, Rashi at the top points out, the Kulus HaMugdoshim, B'Maseches Pesachim Tnan, the Mishnah in Pesachim tells us, HaPigul V'HaNoisor Metamenes Yadayim. There's a rabbinic imposed impurity with regard to someone who touches Pigul, that's a reference to a sacrifice that was processed with an incorrect mindset, and Nosar is a reference to a sacrificial meat that was left over. So, Pigul and Nosar, korban meat, are metames yadayim, means that if someone touches them, they will become tomei. The gazri b'hu rabbonon mishum chashtei kuhuna ve'atzle kuhuna ken mefor shalsam. The rabbonon imposed this restriction because of either kohanim that were suspect of doing something wrong or because of laziness on the part of kohanim, as is explained it in detail in Maseches Pesachim. The gozru af ba'atzomos shishim shunosar. Now, this point is revealed here. It's not mentioned in the Mishnah in Pesachim, but we are suggesting that the rabbinic tumah as a result of touching extends not only to the meat itself, the pigul and nosar, but even the bones that served the nosar. In other words, the marrow inside the bone is considered meat. The bone serving as the case of that meat is called Shishimshu Nosar. And that would be the Chiddush of our Mishnah, which is not referenced in the Mishnah in Pesachim, which does not deal directly with the bones. Continuing in our Mishnah, Kulis Nevela v'Kulis Hasheretz, the thigh bone of a nevela, an animal that didn't receive a proper shechita but rather died, or the kulis of a sheretz, hanogea bohen, one who touches those bones. Stumin tahorin, if the bone is sealed, so there is tahara, and that means there's no tumah, and that's because in the case of nevela, only meat of nevela is metame, not the bones. And likewise with regard to the sheretz. Nekuvin kolshu, if there is a hole in the thigh bone of either the nevela or sheretz, metame v'mago, then there will be tumah through contact, tumas mago. Rashi points out nekuvim kolshehu afilu kechut hasayro, even if it's a hole the size of the diameter of a hair, she'efshu lahachnis bo chut hasayro shel rosho o zikono, he could insert into such a minor type hole a hair from his head or his beard, varehu metame bekach kele kamon, and tumo can be communicated in that way. Continuing in the Mishnah, Minayin Shaf Bimaso, from where do we know that in the case of the Nevela, there will be Tuma, even if the there will be Tuma, provided the bone has a hole in it. Talmud Lomar Hanogea Vahanose. We saw this on the previous daf, Psukim in Vayikra Perek Yud Aleph Lamed Tes and Posuk Mem, and we see Es Shebolech La Mago Bolech La Maso. If there is a potential for maga through tuma through contact, then there is the possibility of tuma through carrying, through supporting. Lo bo lechlal mago, if it is not possible to touch, for example, the sealed kulis, then lo bo lechlal maso, then there won't be tumas maso either. The Gemara, in looking at the beginning of the Mishnah, where reference was made to the kulis hameis, the Mishnah said at the top of this omed, it said hanogea bohen. So we want to infer nogea in avomahil lo. Tuma is communicated through touching, but not through overshadowing. Generally speaking, when we speak about tumas meis, it's very common to speak about the issue of overshadowing, where you are under the same roof as a corpse or piece of corpse. In our Mishnah, we're making a specific, statement that the kulis of the mace is metama through maga, leaving us to think that there is no tumas ohel, and that is a rather perplexing point. The Gemara on the side, on the outside margin of our Shas Ozer that appears on your screen, you'll notice we have a Nosei Mivne heading. Because as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you will notice a little volcano shape around the word E as we go on. So in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading, we have written, we feature this volcano shape, and we've written Shlovim. These represent stages, Levarer, to clarify, Bema Medubar, in under what circumstances are we speaking, Shikulis Meis de Masis and Metama Bemagava Lo Boel. What do we mean here when we say it's metama only through contact and not through overshadowing? So the Gemara continues. Heichi domi. What are the circumstances? E di iko kezayis bosar. If on this bone, this kulis, this thigh bone, you have an olive quantity of human flesh, then boil nami letame. There should certainly be tumas oil as well, not just tuma through contact, but tuma through overshadowing as well. So the Gemara answers, Deleko kezayas bosar. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where the bone does not have a kezayas, an olive quantity of human flesh on it. Ve'i de'iko kezayas moyach mi bifnim. And if we're talking about a case where, albeit there's no flesh, olive quantity of flesh on the outside, but there is a kezayas, an olive quantity of marrow, Tuma bukas viola, we know that tumas meis will penetrate when it is contained within a confined environment. Its bokas penetrates and ascends, and therefore ba'oil nami v'tami, there should still be an oil possibility. So the Gemara says, Daleko kezayas moyach bifnim. We're talking about a thigh bone that does not have an olive quantity of marrow inside. Question: V'i moyach mibifni mala aruka mibachutz. If you are of the opinion that when there is marrow on the inside of a bone, and let us say you had a case where the meat was stripped away from the thigh bone of a living creature, of a living person, and you hold that when marrow develops, it will cause a regeneration of the surrounding flesh. That's mala aruka mibachutz, regeneration of surrounding flesh. Then aver me'al yohi. Rashi points out then the thigh bone is considered a complete limb. If, once again, if it has the power of regeneration when marrow would appear, Rashi points out that even though we're talking about an isolated thigh bone, but however, since in potential, this thigh bone, if it were part of a living person, even if it currently does not have a kazayas of marrow, marrow will appear, will develop when it's attached to a living person. And with the development of that marrow, if you hold that the bone is capable of regenerating the surrounding flesh, then as it is right now, even without the marrow, it would be termed or considered a complete limb. Well, be'oel nami latami, then there should be tumas ohel all the same. Once again, even if there is no moach in there right now, since when attached to a living person, the moach will come, and with the coming of the moach, the marrow, there will be regeneration, so it should be termed a complete limb right now and create tumas ohel. To this we respond, Omar Rav Yudah Abreidu Rav Chiya Zosomeres. This teaches us, this shows, in other words, we have a Mishnah right now that describes a kulis and is suggesting that there is no tumas oil concerning this kulis. This teaches us, moyach mifnim, eino mala ruka mibachutz. Apparently, that when there is, even if there is marrow inside, it will not cause the regeneration of the surrounding flesh. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we notice a new geometric form, the diamond with a shaded in tip. Under the Mivneh heading, the structural note in the outside margin, we note this marking and explain these are ukimtos. These are attempts to set up the circumstances of the Mishnah. But my askinon bekulis demasnisin, what are we speaking about? What are the circumstances of the kulis of our Mishnah? Bearing in mind that up till this point, our understanding is that the kulis will generate only tumas mago and not tumas oyel. So what are the circumstances? But my ukimta, and as you can see, as you scan down the page, we'll have several approaches to this issue. So up till now, how have we set it up? The leka kezias. There isn't a kezias of flesh on the bone. Hence, there is no tumas oyel. Well, ihochi, if we're talking about in our Mishnah a kulis bone that does not have a kezias, we have a couple of questions. Number one, b'mukdashim amai matame. Why is it that in the case of the sacrificial bone, there is tumah? After all, if there is less than a kezias, if you don't have a kezias, then you don't have a situation of what's called shimush noisar, because the shiur, the quantity of noisar on which they ever made a gezerah, the rabbinic tumah that we saw that was imposed based on the Mishnah Psochem, was if you have a kezias of nosar. Here, if you don't have a kezias of nosar, so then you don't even have shimush, the serving of nosar, as we suggested, the bone was a type of case or serving element of nosar. Well, you don't have it. The su, and a second question, kulis nevelov, kulis hasheretz, ki nikvu amai matame. The Mishnah made mention of the kulis of a nevela or sheretz. If there is a hole in them, there will be tumah. But if you're telling us that we're talking about a bone that doesn't even have a kezias of bosar, then why should there be any tumah? The minimum shiur would have been a kezias. The Gemara answers, Ha lo kashya. As far as this is concerned, there is no difficulty. Reisha deleko kezayis. The Reisha which spoke about the kulis hameis, there is no kezayis, and therefore there is no tumas oihel. The only tuma we can speak about is the bone generating tuma, and that would be the case through mago. Seifa, the seifa of the Mishnah that spoke about mukdashim nevela and sheretz, deika kezayis. This is a somewhat unusual setup of a Mishnah where you say that the Reisha is talking about one circumstance and the Seifa a different circumstance, and as a result of that, we'll see later approaches that don't set up the Mishnah like this, but in the meantime, this we're calling our first approach, that the Reisha is, there is no Kezias, and the Seifa, there is a Kezias. The Gemara asks, "Umay komash molon?" Well, what's the chiddush of this Mishnah? Rashi elaborates and says that if you're telling us that the Reisha is where there is no kezayis, have we not heard in the past that a bone is mitama only b'mago and not b'oil? And have we not heard that a kezayis of nevela is mitama? Have we not heard this elsewhere? So what's the chiddush of our Mishnah? Answer, mili, mili, komash molon. There are details. Each one of the points of the Mishnah reveals a particular legal detail. And you can see we have triangles, and these are explained under our Mivneh heading, kulios hashonos b'mishnosenu lefi ukimto harishona. Different aspects or halachas that apply to the different thigh bones according to the way we've set up the Mishnah. So we continue now with the different detail explanations. Reisha, the Reisha which featured the thigh bone of the mace, in which we said that there was not a kezias. Komash malon, the point here is, the chiddush is, the moyach mi bifnim eino mala ruka mi bachutz, that the marrow that's inside a thigh bone, and as we explained above, we're talking about a case where there is no marrow right now, but we're saying that even if marrow would appear in it, it still wouldn't develop flesh around it from the outside surrounding it, and as a result of that, we're not going to consider it an aver of a mace. If it would have been a limb, it would have created tumas oyel. But as a result of this conclusion that it's not mala aruka mibachutz, it's not considered an aver, and it retains its simple definition or description as a mere bone, and hence there's only tumas mago, which is characteristic of bones, and not tumas oyel. Mugdoshim, komash molon, the Mishnah that when speaking about the kulis of the Mugdoshim, we say that there is a kezias. It tells us, shimush noiser milsahi, that which serves nosar, as we said before, even if it's sealed, If you have a bone, a mukdashim bone that happens to be sealed, and it has a kezias of marrow inside, it serves as a casing for it, and as a casing of the marrow, it's in service of the marrow, which in the case of sacrificial material that's been left beyond its time, it becomes nosar, and not only does nosar meat generate tumah, as was explained by the Mishnah in Psochim, there is the imposed rabbinic tumah. Our Mishnah here alludes to the bone that serves the nosar also communicates tumah through mago. The Omar Rav Mori, the Omar Mori Bar Avua, or as we said, Rav Mori Bar Avua, Omar Rav Yitzchok, Atzamos Kochim Shishim Shunosar, Mitamin Esayodayim, the bones of sacrifices that served the nosar in them are metama, communicate impurity to the hands that touch it. Hoil v'naseh bosis l'dover osir, since they served as a base In this case, the marrow contained within was supported by the bone, and the marrow contained within, after the time has lapsed for eating the korban, it becomes noser, which is a forbidden substance. So this is a bosis ledovar haaser. The bone is a base of that, the basis of that which is forbidden. It serves as a base, as a support, as a case of the nosar, and hence it is also metamas yadayim. So now, what Rav Mori Bar Avua teaches is backed up by our Mishnah. And we would not have known this had I had just the Mishnah in Psachim. Hence, it's important for it to be taught here. Nevela, the chiddush of the case of Nevela, we're talking about the kulis of a Nevela. Afagav, de'iko, kezayas. The chiddush of our Mishnah is that even if there is a kezayas of marrow, then nikva in, lo nikva lo. Only if it has a hole in it will there be tumah. If it doesn't have a hole in it, it won't have tumah. And the chiddush is that you have to have the potential of contact. And that potential exists only if there is a hole whereby you could have inserted a hair of your head or your hair from one's beard into it, creating contact. Now, we have a second approach regarding the issue of the moyach bifnim. We said in our first approach that moyach bifnim ein amal aruka b'chutz. Here we have a second approach, and as a result of that, we're going to have to change the setup of our Mishnah. Abaye omar li'oila moyach bifnim mal aruka b'chutz. If you have marrow inside a bone, it could regenerate the meat around it. Now, if that be the case, so then the question comes back, what about the kulis from the mace? If you have a kulis bone, even if it doesn't have marrow in it right now, but since in the future the marrow that does develop in it, if it were part of a living person, that would regenerate the surrounding flesh, then it should be termed a limb, an aver, and as an aver from a mace, it would generate tumas oil. So why does our Mishnah speak about tumas maga alone? The hocha b'mayaskinon, the case of our Mishnah, the circumstances of our Mishnah is b'sheshafa. He scraped the bone, and as a result of scraping the bone, that will prevent it from being able to regenerate the surrounding flesh, and since it lacks this regeneration aspect, it no longer will be considered a limb of a mace, and it's reduced to being considered a bone, and as such, there is no tumas oyel, as we inferred before. Uchad Rebbe Lozer, and as according to his teaching, Dom Rebbe Lozer, Kulis Shishafa, Rebbe Lozer teaches, if you have a thigh bone that was scraped, La'arka tamea, if it was scraped along its length, and when you scraped the bone along its length, you left a strip of unscraped bone. In other words, you left the original bone surface in a strip form along the length of the bone that you currently scraped, but left a strip unscraped. So if that is the case, then tamea, the kulis will still communicate tumah, because with the strip of unscraped bone along its length, it will be capable of regeneration, as Abaye taught that moch mifnim mala ruka mibachutz l'rochba tahora. If, however, you scraped it around its circumference, it will not be capable of regenerating, and that's the circumstance that our kulis has experienced here, where it's been scraped, either completely scraped in its length, or a ring of bone was scraped away around its circumference, thereby preventing it from ever regenerating the surrounding flesh. The simonech, in order to remember the difference between a scraping in the length and a scraping around the circumference, dikla, remember the phenomenon concerning a tree. And that means, if, let us say, for some reason you wanted to kill a tree. So if you, and the Gemara uses the example of a palm tree. If you were to peel away the bark from a palm tree around its circumference, the tree will die, because the nutrients that are that are drawn up from the ground into the tree and drawn up the tree, when it reaches this belt of scraped away bark, the nutrients will not be able to rise above that point, and the tree will die. However, if you scraped away bark along the length of the tree, but not around its entire circumference, the tree will continue to survive. Hence the parallel between tree and bone. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Now a third approach. You will see as the Gemara goes on how Rabbi Yochanan suggests a third approach to understanding the Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan Omar li'olam di'iko kezayis. The resha like the seifa. This is a very, very significant change. Rabbi Yochanan says that I don't want to set up the resha and seifa, one speaking about no kezias and the seifa yes kezias, but rather I want to have consistency so that the resha also there is kezias. Umoyach bifni mi bifni mala ruka mi bachutz. And in the case of the marrow, the bone with marrow will be capable of regeneration of surrounding flesh. Umai nogea dekotoni. And what does the term nogea, which we thought, in other words, we thought originally when we learned the Mishnah that nogea was a term from which we could infer yes, contact, and no, oil, not true. You know what nogea means? It means oihel. Umai nogea dekotoni mahil. So when the Mishnah says that the kulis of the mace, hanogea bohen, bein sumin kuvin tome, we're talking about tumas oihel. And why, if you're featuring a bone, is there tumas oihel? So Rabbi Yochanan mentions that moya b'fnim is yes ma'ala aruka mibachutz. You can see from the Gemara, and if you focus on the markings, Abaye and Rabbi Yochanan, when speaking about the Moyach Mifnim, which you can see there's a dashed diagonal dashed underlining, this is contrasted with the approach taken by Rav Yehuda Breider of Chia above, who said that Moyach Mifnim is not Ma'ala Ruka Mibachutz. But Rabbi Yochanan's unique contribution here is that we're talking about a bone that in fact has, in the resha as well, concerning the kulis hameis, has a kezias. And the reason for, and as far as nogea is concerned, nogea really means ma'ahil, so that there is tumas oihel. The Gemara continues, v'i moyach mi bifnim u'ma'al aruka mi bachutz. If that's true, that when there is marrow inside, there is regeneration of surrounding meat, kulis nevelu v'kulis hasheretz ki lo nikvu amai tahorim. Why does the Mishnah say that regarding the, and the seifa of the Mishnah, which spoke about the kulis of nevelu and sheretz, if there is no hole, then why should they nevertheless be tahor? The bone itself is considered an aver, and as such, even without moach, since you're telling us that with the appearance of moach, it would be able to regenerate itself, then why are they tohor? Omar Rebbe Binyamin Bar Gidol Omar Rav Hocho b'mayaskinon kegoin diiko kezayis moach hamiskashkesh. So here we have the third setup of the circumstances of our Mishnah. There is, in fact, a kezias. There's an olive quantity of moach. However, it's miskashkesh. That means it's dried and it's been dried and loosened from within the bone. As a result of that, this let's say altered state of the marrow, it will not be capable of regenerating the surrounding flesh. Therefore, Gabi Mace, as far as Tumas Mace is concerned, Tuma Boikas V'Oila. The marrow, being that there is a an olive quantity, it has the din of meat, so that the marrow inside penetrates the bone, penetrates in a legal sense, and it's since we're talking about the thigh bone from a dead person, it penetrates and rises through the bone and creates tumah, and hence there is tumas meis. And tumas meis is something that is communicated through ohel. Nevela, however, with regard to the nevela, kevon de miskashkesh hu, since it's in this state of miskashkesh, namely, it won't regenerate itself. It won't regenerate the surrounding flesh. Therefore, we cannot say that it's considered the limb of a nevela. Rather, it's a function right now of the nevela meat aspect of it. Therefore, nikva in lo nikva lo. If there is a hole in it, so then there's a potential of having contact with the dried marrow, and through maga there will be tuma. However, if it has no hole in it, so then there's no potential even for maga. There's no potential even for contact, and therefore there won't be masa either. There won't be tumas masa either. Omer Rabbi Oven v'teimo Rabbi Yosi bar Oven af anan nami tanina. Now, before we go further, we have a little marking, a house marking, and to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, a number one inside a house. To the outside margin of our Gemara, under our Nosei Mivneh heading, you'll notice the appearance of the house, and we've explained Nisyonos, attempts here, Levaseis, to offer support, Levaseis Chuvas Rabbi Yochanan Dikotana Dekori Leila Oyel Nagia. We're trying to find Tanoim that referred to Tumas Oyel using the word Nogea. Just to remind ourselves, we have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you can align this with the arrow above, where Rabbi Yochanan had explained that Nogea, Dekotoni, Mahil, the word Nogea, is referring to Tumas Oyel. So we want to know, where do you find in Tanaic sources the term used for mal, for overshadowing, may be in the form of mago, nogea, even though the translation indicates two separate things. Nevertheless, we're going to try to show that even though the word nogea appears in a Tanaic source, it's a reference to ohel. The Gemara continues. So, based on Rav Yossi bar Oven, he says we even see this in a Tanaic source. The source says, Hanogea bekachatzi zayis, umahil al chatzi zayis, oi chatzi zayis mahil olov tomei. Now here we are somewhat restricted in our ability to translate, because translation will actually defeat the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish. In this source we see a reference to chatzi zayis, twice, two chatzi zayisim. The beginning of the Mishnah spoke about Nogea b'chatzizayis, and then the continuation spoke about Mahil on a chatzizayis. I amris bishlomo chad shmohu. If you say very well that the term Nogea is really a reference to being Mahil, the overshadowing, then mishum hochi mitzdarif, then I can understand that you have two illustrations of Oyel. You're being mahil over one chatzizayis, and you're also mahil on another chatzizayis, or the other chatzizayis is over you. So then, two like tumas, two like sources of tumah, tumas oyel, mitztaref, will join up, and the two have zayisim will form a complete zayis. And that's the minimum shiur, the minimum requirement for tumas mace. Eloi amris trei shmi ninu. If, however, you say that nogea is not a reference to ohel, then mi mitzdarif. How can two unlike forms of tuma communication join up? V'hotnan, we have the following source that says, in fact, they would not join up. Zeh haklal, this is a rule. Kol shehu mishem echod mitzdaref v'tomei. When you have two partial amounts that are considered the same, or of the same nature. Two partial amounts, both contained within the same type of tumah, they would join up and create tumah. Mishnei Shemos Tohar. If there are two different types of tumah communication, then they won't join up, and the person will remain Torah. The whatever item in question will not absorb tumah. So at this point, then we would have a let's say a point that the point made by Rabbi Ovin, where you see a Tana supporting the idea that Rabbi Yochanan advanced, that the term Nogea could be a reference to Ohel. At this point, the Gemara, though, rejects. Elomai, Chad Shmohu. Are you telling us that Nogea and Mahil are one in the same? That the that Ohel could be referred to by the term Nogea? Amos Seifa. Then let's see how things work out in the Seifa of this source. And it says, Avol Hanogea Bekachatzi Zayis V'dover Acher Mahil Olov V'al Kachatzi Zayis Tohor. If a person is experiencing Nogea to a half Zayis, and something is overshadowing the person and a second Chatzi Zayis, let's say a board or a ceiling of some room is overshadowing the person and another Chatzi Zayis, this Seifa says Tohor. Now, the E Chad Shmohu, we are, of course, at the top of Kuf Chof Hei Amid Beis, the second line, and if you're telling us that it's one name, one category, that Nogea, in fact, is a reference to Ohel, then Amai Tohor, why should there be Tahara? So it would seem then from this that Nogea is something other than Ohel, and hence there are two different kinds of Tuma. One is Nogea and one is Mahil. Well then, Vel Elakashi Resha, then how are we going to explain the opening of this source, where we saw that there was a, where there was Tuma, where there was Nogea b'chatzi zayis, and then Mahil al-chatzi zayis, and we saw there was Tuma. Omar Rebbe Zeira. Before we go on, the Rebbe Zeira is basically going to be continuing this, the rejection of the source supporting the idea that Nogea is called Ohel. Rebbe Zeira explains the Resha that spoke about the two Chatzi Zeisim joining up is Betuma Ritzutza Bein Shtei Migdolim Askinon. We were talking about a Chatzi Zayis that was found positioned between two closets or chests of drawers. The Ein Beinayim Poseach Tefach, and the space between these two chests was less than a tefach, less than a handbreadth. Dekula Negiyahi, the feeling, or the let's say the approach is that since there was no space between the two chests, the Chatzi Zayis of Mace would in effect shoot up between within this very narrow space, and that if you are overshadowing that point, in other words, you have your hand over the that Chatzi Zayis that's positioned on the ground between these two chests, it's as if you are touching it. So the term Mahil at the end of the Resha, where it had mentioned O Chatzi Zayis Mahil Olav, where we said Umahil Al Chatzi Zayis, that Mahil Chatzi Zayis is really a form of Mago, of contact, of touching, so that the Resha that spoke about Hanogea B'Chatzi Zayis, where you were touching one half Aleph quantity of dead human flesh, And mahil achatzizayis, that mahil is talking about this circumstance of the chatzizayis being positioned between, in this very confined space between two chests or between two closets, and your hand was over it. That's not considered a simple case of overshadowing, but that is also a type of magal. And that's what the Gemara means here when it says, dekula negia hi. It's all a case of negia, so that the term mahil there was really a reference to negia, and negia plus negia, the negia of the first chatzizayis and the so to speak negia of the second chatzizayis, they join up. However, we don't have a support from here that the Tana uses the word nogea to refer to ohel. Just to repeat that last point, as far as the Tana is concerned, that resha is a reference to two forms of negia. And we do not, and hence the term nogea at the beginning was an actual touching, and the mahil of the continuation was this specific case of the chatzizayis position between two chests, which is also viewed as nogea. And hence we do not have a support for Rabbi Yochanan from this, that the term nogea means ohel. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan did say that our Mishnah that used the word nogea was in fact referring to mahil. What is the basis of that? And hence the Gemara goes on, Uman Tano Dekori Lo'oil Nogea. Who is the Tano that would be the inspiration or the source of Rabbi Yochanan, who said that Nogea, the word Nogea, could be termed or used as an expression of Ohel? The Gemara answers, Rabbi Yossi he. This, the Tano that we're looking for, will be Rabbi Yossi. It might be worth pointing out that we're going to be preoccupied with Shitas Rabbi Yossi and Halochas concerning Tumah till Kuf Chavov Amal Aleph. Rabbi Yossi, he, we said, Desanyo, Rabbi Yossi, Mirmolo Tarvid Rekev, Mitame Bemaga, Uva Masa, Uva Oyo. That's the source, as you can see, it's in a frame, as we frame all Tanaic sources in our Gemara markings. The source is describing the decayed meat, decayed substance. It's called rekev. Rekev is decayed corpse flesh. Malo tarvid. Tarvid is a spoonful. This is a quantity that figures in the realm of tumas mace. In the realm of tumas mace, there are different quantities under different circumstances of different substances that are all related to the mace, whether it be flesh, bone, and here we're talking about rekev. So for tumas rekev, you need to have a malo tarvid. This is there's a standard quantity called malo tarvid, and if you have that quantity of rekev, it's metame. It will communicate tumas mace, whether it be through contact, through supporting, or through overshadowing. So that's as far as a literal translation is concerned. However, we must continue, because as we mentioned at the outset, literal translations can lead to backfiring what we're trying to prove. Don't forget, we're trying to prove right now that the term mago is a reference to ohel, and that is what we will continue to do right now. Bishlamo b'masav ohel, I understand that there is tuma through the carrying of a molo tarvid of rekev, and through overshadowing, ha kotoin le lekule, v'ha komahil akule, as far as maso is concerned, well, he is carrying the entire quantity, and as far as overshadowing is concerned, he could be leaning over and overshadowing the entire molo tarvid of rekev, so that you have a complete quantity either being supported, that's maso, or overshadowed. Mahil. Elo nogea, holo noga bekule. But as far as touching is concerned, if you have a, let us say, a malo tarvid of rekev, and you touch it. You're not touching the entire quantity. Your finger is touching just part of it, or your hand is just touching the surface of it. So how can you speak about mago of a molo tarvid rekev? So rather, we must conclude that the word mago or nogea is in fact a reference to overshadowing. The Gemara asks, well, then there's redundancy. V'hokotoni nogea, v'hokotoni mahil. Does it not appear as two separate phrases in the same source? So how can you say that nogea is mahil when they're reported in two separate terms? Omar Abaye. Abaye says, in fact, the term nogea is a form of overshadowing. However, Omar Abaye, lamata mitefach oyel. If you're within, if your hand, let's say, is hovering over the melo tarvid, but within a tefach of the rekev, that's negia. Then you see the word negia, the term negia used. Lamalo mitefach oyel greda. If you're above a tefach, above the melo tarvid of rekev, then the term ohel is used. Rava Omar afilu lamalo mitefach nami ohel negiahu. Rava says that above a tefach also, the overshadowing is called nogea. Well then, the question comes up of, well, what about the fact that there are two phrases here? If nogea, if the word mago refers to a distance of even more than a tefach, so then what is the case of uba ohel that appears in the source? Vehechi domi ohel greda. So what's the straightforward or the simple case of ohel? That's behamshocha. That's a case of hamshocha. Well, let's describe that. Hamshocha is the situation where you have the piece of corpse, or the corpse substance, and the individual under a common overhang or overshadowing, a common ceiling, or under a board that has a tefach in width that its length is covering me and the mace, or the mace substance. That's called hamshocha. But where I am directly over the mace, or the mace is directly over me, that is termed nogea. Omar Rava, mino amino la. From where do I know to say that even above a tefach, Rabbi Yossi will call that situation of the overshadowing above a tefach, where there's a distance between me and the corpse material of more than a tefach, that is nevertheless called nogea. Where do we see that? Disnan. So we have a Tanaic source, and of course the Gemara now starts, Rava is asking, from where do I know this? So he provides now an answer to that, and it's going to take a number of lines, and that takes us down. You can see we have a long answer marking to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. The source says Disnan, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chavile Mita Usrige Chalonos. Chavile Mita is a reference to a type of woven rope work that's spread over a bed frame, and on this you could place a mattress and sleep on it. Srige chalonos would be a type of woven screen work covering windows. So if you took this woven work and it says here, Choitzin bein habayis la'aliyo, shel lahachnis tuma letzad sheni. If you had, let us say, a two-story structure, and you took this, and you had boards between the two stories with gaps in them, with wide gaps, and you covered the gaps with this screen work or this woven work, creating a type of complete ceiling made of beams, and between the beams you have this woven work. It will serve to prevent Tumah from rising from the lower story to the upper story. Whereas even though we're dealing with a situation where there are spaces and gaps, and because we're dealing with woven work, it nevertheless serves to block the Tumah from rising from the lower floor to the upper floor. Pirson al pnei hames ba'avir. Let us say you took this woven work, this bed, we'll call this bed weaving that we described just before, and you supported it or suspended it over a corpse. You suspended it in midair over a corpse. And right now it's not functioning as a ceiling for us to consider it a closure. Now we say that if you've supported this woven work above a corpse, Hanogea Keneged Hanekev Tome, if you position yourself, your hand, or over the holes in the woven work, the Tuma will metame me. Shelo Keneged Hanekev Tohor, if you position your, whatever it is, your finger or some food above the area that's covered by the ropes, in other words, not opposite the hole, then Tohor. That's as far as translation is concerned. Hey chidomi, but now we want to know the circumstances. I lemo lamata mitefach. If this woven work is supported above the corpse, but within a tefach of the corpse, then I don't understand the comment of shelo keneged hanekev amai tor. Why does the source teach me that if I'm positioning my finger or the food item above the rope, which namely not opposite the hole, then why is he tor? Meis b'ksusahu, meis b'ksuso metame. There's no difference between this scenario and, let us say, a corpse that's dressed in clothing. A corpse that's dressed in clothing, so if you position yourself above the corpse, the tumah will affect me, even though he's clothed. So the ropes that are above the mace in this network, in this webbing that forms the bed, if it's positioned within a tefach of the mace, there should be tumah. Elo lav, lemalo mitefach. Rather, the scenario here is that this webbing is positioned above the mace more than a tefach. V'kakori le nogeia. Notice the little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. You can see that it should be aligned with the arrow in this opposite the source, a few lines up. What did it say there? It said hanogeia, and it mentioned there keneged nekev tomei and shelo keneged nekev tohor. And what are we talking about? We're talking about a case of overshadowing, of ohel, because we're not talking about actual contact with the body. We're talking about a situation where things, where the webbing is suspended more than a tefach above the body. So we see from here that more than a tefach above, which is a situation of ohel, is referred to by the term nogeya. And that's what Rava was trying to say above. And this is the end of our long, of what was the long answer that Rava was giving. Here is the source for what he said. Now, Omar Abaye disagrees. He says, Le'olam lamato mitefach. The web work suspended above the mace is in fact within a tefach. And that's why the term nogea is used. And this, of course, is like Abaye said before, that within a tefach, the overshadowing is termed nogea, and above a tefach, it's called ohel. So it's within a tefach, udeko amris, and you try to challenge this approach by asking meis b'ksusohu. Well, then it's no different than a case of a corpse that's clothed, where there is tumah, So why is it that if I'm within a tefach, above the mace, and my finger or hand is positioned over the rope section, why does the source say that shelo keneged hanekev, it's tohar, the person is tohar? Isn't it like the corpse that's clothed? The Gemara answers no. Mace b'ksuso mevatale, a corpse that's clothed, well, the clothing is subservient or is void, loses its significance to the body. It's botel to the body, so it can't serve as a block. It can't serve as an interposition. Hai lo mevatale. But the case of the rope, netting, or webbing above, suspended above the body, even though it's within a tefach, it's nevertheless not voided or considered botel to the body, and therefore it's not called biksuso. The Gemara asks, all right, so fine, it's not considered like his clothing, but nevertheless, is there not another rule that should kick in here to, yes, create tumah? V'teve ketumah tmuna bokas v'ola. Why is it that we don't consider it like tumah that's absorbed within something, that if you don't have a tefach, it penetrates and rises above? So that, why is it that if I'm not keneged the nekev, why do you say tor? Should it not be that the tumah penetrates? True that if there is something overshadowing a mace, but there's a gap of a tefach between the corpse and that which is overshadowing the mace, the overshadowing will block the tumah from rising above that point. However, we're talking right now about a case of it being within a tefach of the mace. So why is it, according to Abaye, why is it that the tumah doesn't penetrate the rope and metama that which is above it? So he answers, Kosova Rabbi Yosi tumah tmuna eino bokas. Tumah tmuna, according to Rabbi Yosi, does not penetrate. Well, the Gemara asks, Umana Temra, from where do I know this? So here the Gemara starts an answer. Now, this is a long answer. You can see that we've marked it off accordingly. The tuf that's encircled indicates a teretz with a vertical dashed line, which will continue several lines down, Kuf Chav Vav Amud Aleph. In other words, we have to learn this entire section of Gemara in order to see from where Rabbi Yosi will be of the opinion that Tumuna does not penetrate. So the Gemara is asking once again, Umana Temra, from where do I know to say this? Disnan. Well, we answer. We have a Tanaic source. The Tanaic source features a chest of drawers, a type of closet or chest that's called a teva. Tevas Hamigdal. That's a reference to what we just mentioned, a chest of drawers. Shiesh bo poseach tefach. The interior has this area of a tefach. However, v'ein b'yitzi'osa poseach tefach. However, the entrance, we might say the drawers, or in order to get into this box, in order to get into it, there is no opening that is greater than a tefach. In other words, all the openings to this thing are less than a tefach. Tuma b'socho, if there is, let's say, some corpse material in this chest. Habayis tome, the house in which this chest is contained, the house will experience tuma. Tuma babayis, let's say that as far as the chest of drawers is concerned, there's food inside the chest of drawers. There is substance inside it that is tohor. And the corpse, or corpse material, is in the house. And the question is, what about the contents of the chest? Will it become tomei? So it says, Tuma babayis, mashe besocha tohor. That which is contained within the chest will remain tohor. Now, how do you explain this one-directional movement of Tumah? Namely, Tumah will move out and not move into it. The standard approach to tumah is we take it out, but we don't put it in. Rabbi Yossi mitahir. Rabbi Yossi, unlike the Tanakama said if there was a tumah in the chest, the house will become tomei, or the house meaning that which is contained in the house will become tomei. Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and he is mitahir. Why? Because in order to extract the tumah from this chest, you could extract it in quantities less than a kezias, in chatzoyin, in parts, in halves, or to in fact burn it while it's still in the chest, so that Rabbi Yossi is saying the tumah might never come out either at all or in the quantity that would create tumas oihel. V'katoni seifa. And now regarding this source, the Seifa says, Hemido bepesach upischol achutz. You took this chest that we described and positioned it in such a way that the opening was facing outdoors, outside the house. Tumo besocha, habayis tohor. Now here you see a departure from the case we had above. Here, if there's tumo in the chest, but the opening to the chest is positioned facing outside the house, so the contents of the house will remain tohor. Tuma babayis, mashe besocha tohor. And this maybe isn't so surprising because he said this before. The Tanakama said if tuma is in the house, the tuma will not enter this chest. So that if tuma is in the house, whatever is inside the chest will remain tohor. Vitoni Allah. Now we're at the top of Kuf Chovov, and it is stated concerning this, Rabbi Yossi mitahir. Now, what is this comment going on? Ilemo aseifa, if it's referring to that which we saw at the bottom of Kuf Chov Hamid Beis, the seifa, well, Tanakama nami tahuri kometayer, the Tanakama says the same thing, that there is tahara. In fact, with our markings, we try to emphasize with a dashed underline under the expression tor at the bottom line, we have dashed and underlined it twice, indicating that the Tanakama, under all circumstances, when the chest is positioned with the openings facing outdoors, there's tahara in both cases. So what's Rabbi Yossi saying any different? Why do I need Rabbi Yossi to comment? Elo, rather, Rabbi Yossi is not going on the Seifa. Elo, de ka'omar Tanakama. The Tanakama had said, Tumo besocha habayis tomei. The Tanakama had mentioned that if there was tuma in the chest, if there's tuma in the chest, the house will become tome. And of course, we're not talking about the circumstances where the entrance is facing outdoors, but rather like in the Reisha where the chest was in the house. And the Tanakama said, if there was tuma in the chest, the tuma will exit. And will be metame the contents of the house. Why? Imishum de derech tumah lotzeis, either because it's the way of tumah to exit, the imishum de tumah tmuna bokas, or it might be because of tumah tmuna being able to penetrate. And Rashi explains, based on a diuk, that the Reisha had featured a teva that had been poseach tefach, indicating to us that had it not been poseach tefach, so as far as the Tanakama is concerned, tuma would have penetrated. The Ko'omar le Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi responding to the Tanakama, the Ko'amris derech tuma lotzeis, as far as your reason for being metama the contents of the house because of the style or the way of tumah is to exit, I don't agree. You could have extricated the tumah in parts less than the quantity, and hence it wouldn't have generated tumah, or you could have burnt it while it was still in the chest. And as far as the other scenario that you described, that the contents of this box was less than a tefach, then and hence the tuma would have penetrated. Even regarding that, I say tuma tumuna eino bokas, and we've dashed underlined this because this was the point of this entire discussion, where we are showing here that Rabbi Yossi will tell you that the absorbed tuma, the tuma contained within, does not penetrate outwards. Before concluding our shiur, let us glance at the Rashi for an additional level of explanation. Rashi we'll be looking at is at the upper part of the page, beginning of the narrow lines, Eloshami l'tanakama d'komar habayis tomei. The Rabbi Yossi, when he said at the top of this omid, he had heard the Tanakama saying that the house was tomei, called Heicha de Mishkachas Chadameinach Trei Tami, wherever you find one of the two reasons, Imishum Derech Tuma Lotzeis, whether it be because of the way of Tuma to exit, hence, if the Tuma is in the chest, it will exit and metama the contents of the house, Kigon Reisha the Yesh Boposeach Tefach, like the case of the Reisha, where it said, Tevas Migdash Yesh Boposeach Tefach, the Ein Kan Tuma Tmuna, since there is a space or an airspace within the chest of a tefach, it's not called absorbed tuma. So why will the tuma affect the house? Ela mishum de seifa lotzeis. The e mishum, or another possibility of why tuma will be while the tuma will exit the chest and enter the house, because the tuma tumuna bokas, it could be because of that circumstance called tuma tumuna. And how do we know that the Tanakama would hold this? Midinokat Reisha, from the fact that the Reisha cited Yesh Bo Poseach Tefach. The Reisha example was specifically where there was an interior space of a Tefach. V'tana Seifa Allah, and the Seifa concerning this case, the Seifa spoke about Hemido B'Pesach U'Pischa L'Chutz Habayis Tohor, where you positioned the chest that had a poseach tefach, you positioned it at the entrance to the house. V'shamino mino taimo diyesh bo poseach tefach, the ein kan oil tuma tumuna. And the reason the house was tohor is because the contents of the chest was a tefach, and the exit was positioned outdoors, positioned at the doorway facing the outdoors. From this, we could medayik, we can infer, ha ein ba poseach tefach, afilu midu bepesach upischa l'chutz habayis tomei. We would have inferred, though, had there not been a poseach tefach, even though he positioned the chest at the entrance to the house, Habayis Tomei, the house would have become Tomei Mitnei Tuma Tumuna Bokas, because the absorbed Tuma, the Tuma contained within the chest that doesn't have a space of a Tefach, would have penetrated. Vavikilu Mutelis Bekarka Habayis, and it's as if the Tuma was simply on the floor of the house, Habayis Ma'aloleo, and the house overshadows. Well, and concerning that, Rabbi Yossi declared unequivocally, he said, Tohor, he was Metahir. And as we said, the reason for that was either because of Derech Tuma Lotzeis. Rabbi Yossi says, I don't agree with that. And as far as Tuma Tumuna is concerned, I hold Tuma Tumuna does not penetrate. And as we said before, this was the point that Rava was trying to show us, was trying to answer. And as we said, with this, we come to the just a slight mistake there, not Rava, but Abaye was trying to make this point that as far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, Tuma Tumuna would not have penetrated. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.